Consolazio alongside Sam Saig for episode 11 of Running the Option. Sam, how you doing?
I'm good. You know, I'm starting to fear, though, that the BCS is actually going to work itself out again in yet another year because we watched two more teams drop out of the running this week. And here's hoping that there's still anarchy left. But, you know, the system always tries to find a way to sort itself out by the end, and we might be headed that direction again.
Yeah, let's talk about those upsets. The only way, of course, that anarchy possibility is still there is if Oklahoma beats Oklahoma State, you're going to have all these one-loss teams that are going to have a strong case. It does kind of look like it would shape out in a way that the BCS could figure it out, but we'll get to that. Let's first just talk about what happened last Saturday. Now, the Boise State loss to TCU, a bit of a stunner. A lot of a stunner, obviously, but a bit of a stunner in the way that it happened for me. Boise State is obviously known for Kellen Moore and for what he does and what this offense does, but this has always been a proud defensive team, too. And for this team to give up 473 passing yards and 5 touchdowns through the air was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 65-game home winning streak that's over. For me, it's a little stunning when you talk about what records and what streaks came to an end. But to be sure, I'm not going to put all the blame where some people do, which is on the fact that the last 2 years, walk-on kickers have decided Boise's fate.
Yep.
Because like you said, there's a lot that happens to get us to that point in the game. It's not just the kicking that has failed Boise. It's a defense that we expect a lot more out of than what we saw this past Saturday. I will say this, for a little while, it looked like the refs were going to keep all those streaks alive with a play that I think was one of the worst home cooking calls I've seen. It was a pass interference call against Greg McCoy, the corner for TCU, that kept the drive that Boise had to try to kick that 39-yard game-winning
yep.
field goal going. And there was no chance Matt Miller, the receiver, was going to catch that ball. It was uncatchable, and yet they called that play. A lot of people were saying, even after the game, had they gone on to win that game and put themselves maybe in a position to go to the national championship, it would have been a terrible fallout because of that call. But, you know, obviously it was poetic justice that the kick missed. But, you know, a lot to digest, obviously, with Boise losing another game in that way.
Kellen Moore, 28 of 38, 320 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Can't put this one on him.
No.
He continues to be one of the great college quarterbacks ever. You put it on the defense, and you're right. The main story was, here we go again with a kicker, but why, at home, are you down one and needing a referee to give you a bogus call to be in position to win a game that you're a two-touchdown favorite in, and it's really your last big test? You have a cakewalk for the rest of the way, and you now have a legitimate chance of going to the national championship, something they didn't have last year with Oregon and Auburn eventually running the table. So, disappointing finish for Boise State, disappointing finish for Kellen Moore's career, obviously. He came back, arguably, for this chance, and they come up short. And it opens the door for Houston, all of a sudden, to get into a BCS bowl, because the top team that's from a non-BCS conference, if they're in the top 12, gets an automatic BCS bid as an at-large, and that was looking like Boise State, but now all of a sudden that could be Houston.
You know, they're positioned perfectly at 11th, I guess, right now, and really, it's just the path is set for them, but like you said, I mean, Kellen Moore, for all the blame that needs to be put on Boise State, I won't put any of it on Kellen Moore. I mean, here's a guy that didn't have his starting center. And then he loses his top two rushers during the game, and really all they need is a first down to close out that game. But Drew Wright comes in, a third-string tailback, after Doug Martin and DJ Harper out of the game. And, of course, he fumbles. You can't put that on Kellen Moore. Plus, Boise State, you know, their defense didn't play well, but they were missing their top three corners.
Yep.
So
that would explain the passing issues.
Right. You're putting a lot of pressure on Kellen Moore, and he still put them in a position to win. He just couldn't get the result in the end. But, you know, what a remarkable career, and it's just unfortunate for him that they're not going to get a chance to get to a BCS game, let alone the BCS title game.
Yeah, when you look at all those injuries, maybe we should have saw this one coming more than we did. I did say that would be a good game, but you had to figure at home Boise State would take it. But maybe the bigger surprise, We went back and forth on the Oregon-Stanford game. When we recorded the podcast, we were both on Stanford, I think 6 hours before we were on Oregon, and every 6 hours after, we went back and forth on the game. But we were both expecting it to be a great game, and Oregon destroyed Stanford, 53-30 in Stanford, in Palo Alto. And yeah, the game was close at points, but Oregon imposed their will, and they are clearly the class of the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, statistics, some of the stats in this game will tell the story. Others don't tell it at all. By the numbers, Oregon had two more yards than Stanford, 387 to 385. But that is not a number that you can pay attention to when you think about how the field set up for Oregon, because they had so many short fields with the turnovers,
exactly,
forcing five turnovers. They had over 100 yards more rushing than Stanford, which we thought was going to be critical. But the story, obviously, that you have to take out of this game is what Nick Aliotti's defense was able to do, turning in a dream performance. They schemed perfectly to bring pressure from every angle, and they legitimately rattled Andrew Luck. And I mean, we mentioned a couple of things last week about this game. First, the fact that Oregon was going to have to disrespect the Stanford receivers. Stanford lost their only true playmaker at receiver with Chris Owusu, and in that sense, Oregon really had to just say, we're not going to respect these guys. We're going to play them one-on-one and bring a lot of pressure, and they did that. And the second thing is we mentioned the Stanford safety, Michael Thomas, warning his team and the media that they weren't playing very well as a unit together. And he said, you know, a small mistake can turn into a 60-yard touchdown against a team like Oregon. And that's exactly what happened. I don't know if it's self-fulfilling prophecy, but Michael Thomas was concerned going into the game that his unit wasn't up to speed, and they were absolutely taken out of it when Oregon got the ball back off those turnovers and just did what they do on offense.
Yeah, I was saying last week that I liked that he came out and said that, because I thought it meant that they weren't content with being 9-0, that they were going to be focused. But it might have been the opposite. It might have been that they weren't confident. And maybe they went into this game doubting themselves a little bit, which you can't do against a team like Oregon. Andrew Luck finishes 27 of 41, 256 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, one of them a pick 6, a pedestrian day. Yep. And we are going to get into the Heisman conversation in the next segment. But going into last week, I thought Andrew Luck had the Heisman Trophy locked up. Even if they lost this game to Oregon, I wouldn't have expected him to look so shaken up as often as he did, and to not be able to put up stats. If you would have told me that Oregon was going to be up for the entire game, I would have assumed that Andrew Luck would have, say, a 400-yard day trying to catch Oregon. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case. It was a pedestrian day on the biggest stage of all. So, a disappointing game all around for Stanford. And now, not only are they not in the BCS championship picture, they're not in the Pac-12 championship picture.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Luck, he threw 2 picks last year at Autzen Stadium, which he hadn't done at all, really. It was the second time in his career that it had happened. And now you can add another multi-pick game to the Ducks' defensive resume against him, because they made his mechanics and poise disappear for a game, which is incredibly hard to do. And they held Stanford to 3.7 yards a carry. We talked about how important it was for Stanford to get 5 yards on first down so that they can get themselves into manageable down and distance. And because Oregon was able to set a tone physically against probably the best offensive line in the country to that point with Stanford, and they were able to take them, the running game, out of it, which is hard to do, and then they got pressure on Andrew Luck. And like you said, you could make an argument, and we will get into this later, obviously, that LaMichael James being healthy and setting the tone with 146 yards and 3 TDs, we may have seen a switch in terms of where they stand in the Heisman race. They may have flip-flopped, but it was just one of those games where Oregon, absolutely away from Autzen Stadium, brought that same pressure that you're used to seeing from them when they're at home, and they took it on the road.
Yeah, it was a speed-power matchup like we were talking about. Right. Speed won in this case, and now you have to look at Stanford and wonder how legit they really are. Yeah. Because all of a sudden, similar to what we saw with Wisconsin, I've loved Stanford all year, and I love how they're built on both sides of the ball, but now when I'm looking at their full body of work, they had an awful lot of trouble against USC, and they get destroyed by Oregon. And the rest of their wins are just to teams that they should have beaten. So I'm interested to see that game against Notre Dame at the end of the year. It's one more test that it wouldn't prove anything. It wouldn't really hold too much weight. It could keep them alive for an at-large bid in the BCS. But I just want to see how they handle another tough opponent. Yeah. Not as tough as these two, but another tough opponent, because now all of a sudden I'm wondering if I was overrating Stanford all along.
Yeah, and if you're a Stanford fan, all you really have left, there are some goals out there. You want to keep your quarterback Andrew Luck in the Heisman race, and you want to try to get that at-large bid to a BCS game and finish with a nice season. But no, it's a far cry from where we thought they were going to be at the end of this weekend. And for Oregon, obviously, I had question marks about Darren Thomas and how he was going to play, and he played great. I mean, he didn't have to do that much on short fields, but he had 3 touchdowns and no interceptions and managed that offense brilliantly, and they're right back into the thick of things. You know, for me, the last stat that, if you look at both of these games, that just stood out to me, Andrew Luck is 29-6 as a starter. Kellen Moore is 46-3 as a starter, one of the best marks, the best mark of all time. And so 75-9 combined, and they both lose at home in the same weekend. Just amazing.
Pretty remarkable. That's a really good bring up. Just mathematically speaking, if you worked it out, yeah. I'm pretty darn sure we saw a weekend that we're not going to see very often.
Right.
So as we've been doing the last couple weeks, we have to look at the BCS standings now, because as you were saying, they're starting to clear up and it's all starting to come together as to what's going on here. We're looking at LSU and Oklahoma State at 1-2. Of course, they both control their destiny as the two undefeated teams. Houston, of course, is the third, but they're not being considered obviously for the BCS championship just yet.
Yeah, right.
Alabama at 3, Oregon at 4 now, Oklahoma at 5, Arkansas at 6, and then the two ACC teams, Clemson and Virginia Tech, at 7-8. I'm not seeing any real chance for Clemson or Virginia Tech at this point, just because there's so much traffic ahead of them, although either of those teams could finish with one loss, win the ACC, and you know, finish in the top 6 or top 5, depending on what happens with these other teams. But looking at that sweet spot there, that Alabama, Oregon, Oklahoma, that's where the story is, because Arkansas, if they beat LSU, we'll have that conversation. And looking at when we get to next week and we're looking at that game, we'll get more in depth into some possible SEC ramifications if Arkansas pulled off that upset. But looking at Alabama, Oregon, Oklahoma, they all have a pretty realistic shot at running the table here. And once again, as of right now, knowing what we know now, who do you think would finish in that 3 spot if they all run the table from this point on?
I mean, there are a million ways to break down this debate with these 3 teams, and you have to look at these 3 as the legitimate contenders to try to get into that, you know, second spot, let's say, against a team like LSU if Oklahoma State goes down. And the way that I guess you have to break it down is first by the numbers. What can we concretely say with the quality of their wins, the quality of their losses, how their schedules compare? And then you have to just do that proverbial eye test after that. So with Alabama, they have a win over number 6 Arkansas at home. They have a win over number 21 Penn State on the road. And for me, as I go through this, I'm going to take the BCS standings, and we're going to just look at how is the current top 25 BCS standings looking, and where do these teams get their kind of resume from? So right now, Arkansas is number 6. They got a win over them. They got a win over number 21 Penn State on the road, and they could conceivably get a win over another ranked team in Auburn at number 24 on the road. And as down as the SEC has been, the conference still has 5 teams ranked in the BCS top 25, which is tied for the most among any conference. So we both think that the SEC is down, and rightfully so, I think it is, but they still managed to have 5 teams ranked in that top 25. So there is a case to be made for Alabama. Oregon counters Alabama with a really top-notch win over number 9 Stanford, and they could get another ranked win over USC this week. Now, USC can only get ranked in the AP, but they're a legitimate ranked team. The problem is they won't get another opportunity to get a win over a ranked team over that. And when you talk about late season statements, as these other teams make them, they're not going to get a chance to make them. And especially if you're going to reopen the rematch idea, it's hard to figure out how to make a case for Oregon if they win out, because if you're going to open that rematch clause and Alabama is also undefeated, then it's hard to figure out where Oregon, they're going to have to look so good against USC and then just blow away these two teams, Oregon State and the Pac-12 South winner. It's going to be an eye test show for them where they just have to look really good.
It's a shame for Oregon, actually, yeah, that USC has the sanctions they have, because if USC was representing the Pac-12 South and this game coming up was a good game and then they had a rematch just a few weeks later, that could really be the type of storyline that could catapult them. A win over Arizona State or UCLA at this point just isn't going to impress anybody. It's not going to be enough of a statement.
And the irony is, when they beat USC, that's going to knock them potentially out of the top 25, because they'll go from 18th with three losses out. So then, you know, so even that is a tough one. And that's the thing about Oregon, that's going to be an uphill battle. But certainly they've looked the part recently, and at least they got a big, huge win over Stanford.
Yeah, and when you talk about numbers between Alabama and Oregon, it really just comes down to whether the computers like offense or defense. Right. Because when you look at Alabama's defense, they don't give up more than a touchdown. Yeah. They haven't given up more than two touchdowns in any game this season. And they haven't given up more than a touchdown in but a couple. So this defense is unstoppable. And then you look at a team like Oregon that just consistently drops 40-plus points. I think the schedules are somewhat comparable.
Yeah.
And yes, you could argue that Alabama pushing LSU to overtime was a better loss, but I would argue that Oregon did more against LSU's defense than anybody else did, mm-hmm. and that was at a neutral field instead of a home advantage game that Alabama had, and that it was at the beginning of the season. Obviously, LSU wasn't at their best yet either, but you know, I think you could argue that a mid-season loss at home, even just a three-point loss in overtime, isn't miles better than the loss that Oregon had over LSU, or to LSU.
Yeah, if you bring it down to that game, it's easy to make an argument for either team, including Oregon. The funny thing is going to be, Alabama could conceivably get some help here, which Oregon can't, because if Arkansas was to somehow beat LSU, there's a chance Alabama finds itself representing the West and gets another quality win over Georgia, and that's what the Pac-12 doesn't have. We're based in LA, but there's no question there are two teams in the Pac-12, three if you stretch it, that are ranked teams, and after that, there's nothing. The SEC, potentially, if you got that game against Georgia for Alabama, they could help themselves dramatically.
It wouldn't even matter that point, because a one-loss SEC champion, it wouldn't even be a conversation. You're right. Even if it is a down year for the SEC, it's still the SEC. It's always going to have that name brand that the Pac-12, the Pac-12's going in the right direction, but it's not even a top two conference. I'd have to say the Big 12 is the second best conference if again, you're looking at top 25 teams. And the ironic thing is that both Alabama and Oregon need Oklahoma State to lose a game. But if they do, it's going to be to the team behind them.
And let's talk about that team, because Oklahoma, if they were to win that game, their resume, to me, is far and away the best of any team in the country, including LSU. Because if you look at it, Oklahoma would have wins. Now, LSU would be undefeated, but Oklahoma would have a win over, right now in the BCS rankings, number 25 Florida State on the road, number 23 Texas on a neutral field.
And Florida State, sorry to interrupt,
right,
but Florida State coming around and showing that they are capable of playing the football we thought they were capable of playing is a huge for that game.
I mean, they can get a win this week at number 22 Baylor. They have a win at number 13 Kansas State, and then they would have perhaps the best win of any team other than LSU with a win over number 2 Oklahoma State on the road. That's 5 wins over top 25 teams in this week's current BCS standings that have come away from their home, either on a neutral field or on the road. And the Big 12, you could argue top to bottom, has been the best conference in the country when you look at the entire conference.
I'd agree with
that. So it's hard to imagine a one-loss Big 12 champion, even though Oklahoma doesn't really pass a lot of people's eye tests anymore, because they've been in national title games against the SEC twice, against USC in this decade, and they've come up short every time. But if you look at their body of work this year, the only thing they have going against them, and it's a big thing to have going against, is a really damaging loss at home. But I would argue that how can we discount 5 wins away from home against top 25 teams? Does anybody even come close to that? That's the issue.
Yeah, is strength of schedule enough to erase that loss, though, it's such a damaging loss. Yes. Everything you're saying is true. They do have the best resume win-wise. That's not debatable.
Right.
Especially if they beat Oklahoma State. Yeah. It's not debatable. But the loss is so bad. And I think they'd get a pass for it for all the reasons you just mentioned, and perhaps rightfully so. But
yeah, unfortunately,
to lose to Texas Tech at home, Oregon and Alabama are sitting there saying, hey, we lost to the unanimous, perhaps the most unanimous number one team we've seen of the decade here. And these guys at home lost as a 29-point favorite to a team that since then has only made that loss look worse by being one of the worst teams in the country. So
the issue is we're dealing with computers. And the computer, when they get that win over Oklahoma State, if they get it, I don't think there's a whole lot of doubt that they easily jump Oregon. And easily maybe even jump Alabama, because I'm not sure what Alabama and Oregon are going to have that can compare to what they'd have by the end of that. The loss is terrible, but it's just one of those things where how can you figure out a way that they don't get in?
No, I agree with you. I think if they get that win against Oklahoma State, it is probably enough, because Alabama and Oregon aren't going to have that chance. Yeah. And
which is unfortunate, because when you really look at these teams, if you really want to do, again, this is the debate of computer versus eyeballs. And the eyeball test doesn't suggest that Oklahoma necessarily should be in that game. It was a bad loss against Texas Tech. They're missing players now. It's one of those things where they may not even, I mean, they're going to have to play their best game of the year just to have a chance to beat Oklahoma State. But if they do, in a year where the Big 12, again, top to bottom, is probably the deepest conference, they also have five teams that are ranked in the top 25 right now. It's hard to know how you leave the Big 12 champion with one loss out of that title game. That's the argument, if you want to take it from a conference perspective, that it's hard to figure out how to take them out of it and put a team like Oregon in, or a team even like Alabama, which it's debatable, but the conference and the wins is what you have to consider also.
And, you know, it works against Alabama and Oregon that they have already lost LSU.
Right.
Because if nothing else, just talking about an eyeball test, I'd rather see another game because I've already seen LSU beat these two teams.
Just add that to the list.
Exactly. Lots of things going in Oklahoma's favor.
And just briefly, and we'll touch on this obviously a lot when it gets closer, but Arkansas is the intriguing team that could throw this into a tailspin, because if they won at LSU, and I just learned this recently, the tiebreaker, the way it works there, is you would have a situation where there are three teams in the SEC West that now each have a loss. And the way the tiebreaker works is you take the team ranked third and you throw them out. And then it becomes a head-to-head in a tiebreaker scenario between the top two teams that are ranked. Meaning, if Arkansas passed Alabama and stayed behind LSU, they would represent the SEC West in the title game.
So it's not just based on BCS standings?
It's not. The BCS standings only come into effect when you look at throwing the team that's ranked third out, which it could still be Arkansas.
Sure.
I mean, they would have to pass Alabama, but unlike what we thought, they don't have to pass LSU to then represent, which is a huge change from what we thought, because all they would have to do is beat LSU head-to-head, find a way to pass Alabama in the rankings, and then they would be the team that goes in, and wouldn't that throw everything into a loop as far as who we send at that point to the national title? You would have Arkansas potentially representing the SEC West ranked lower than LSU. So think about putting Arkansas into a national title game, and they're not even ranked ahead of LSU.
Or imagine Arkansas winning that game and the following week still being below LSU and Alabama, and they're saying, what in the world are you doing to us, computers?
Yeah, it's so many crazy statements. Now, as we touched on earlier with the ACC teams, the issue for them, you know, Clemson would have a win over Virginia Tech on the road, a win over Auburn, a win over Florida State, and potentially a win at South Carolina. Not a terrible resume.
No.
It'd be curious to see how the computers would rank them. Unfortunately for Virginia Tech, as of now, the win of note for them is Georgia Tech, and it's hard to know how they're going to get themselves a better resume, because right now they might even represent the ACC in a title game, but what can they do with it?
Well, beating Clemson would definitely be impressive, I'd say, and I think the ACC has had a decent enough year that if we're looking strictly at resume, I agree with you. Virginia Tech doesn't have much more than that.
Right now, Clemson clearly has the better resume, obviously.
They do. But if Virginia Tech beat Clemson in an ACC championship game, and they had the Georgia Tech game, and they only had one loss, I have trouble putting them ahead of Oregon, Alabama, Oklahoma. That gets back to the eye test thing. I just don't think Virginia Tech is quite on the same tier. Yeah.
I certainly think Clemson would have a much better chance in the eye test than Virginia Tech would.
Because of the schedule. And a win for them over Virginia Tech would be huge.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, they already have the win on the road, a decisive one against Virginia Tech. And when you couple that with a win over some of these other teams that are still ranked in the top 25 right now with the BCS, it helps them, but it's still going to be hard for a one-loss ACC team to get in there. But, you know, a lot to obviously chew on here, you know, and we'll find out more in the next couple of weeks. But these three teams, Oklahoma, Alabama, and Oregon, it's kind of right now a three-horse race for seeing who could fit into Oklahoma State's spot if it comes to it.